Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ho, 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 my friends. Merry Christmas and welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up on this festive fun bag, the one and only Tom Hanks tells us all about his starring role in the new film A Man Called Otto. U2 legend Bono turns the pages of his new autobiography, Surrender. 40 songs, one story. The always hilarious Joe Brand makes us laugh with a Christmas carol with an E. Sky Max's reimagining of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. And the multi-talented Rob Brydon spills the beans on the Smeds and the Smooths, airing on BBC One this Christmas Day. All of that and so much more to come, so Vassos, kick things off and tell us who's first. Here's Tom Hanks. Have you got an intro?
I don't have an intro. I was told no intro, please. I could sort of make it up on the hoof.
Okay, don't worry. It's only Tom Hanks. Why would we want to do a massive intro for him? He's only the biggest star in the world.
The first question, what's the best question you've been asked doing these interviews, and I'll just ask that straight.
When you're literally like the best question you can have
about this film, about A Man Called Otto.
Oh, you know what? I would say it would be about Pittsburgh, the city of Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh is like, I ran into the singer Richard Hawley.
Yeah.
He's
amazing.
Said fantastic.
I love him.
And he says that Sheffield is the most beautiful city in the world.
I agree.
That's the way Pittsburghers feel about Pittsburgh. Yeah. There is no reason to leave Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It is a great, it's got beautiful topography. It's got the three rivers. It's got vibrant neighborhoods absolutely everywhere. I've worked there twice. One is, beautiful day in the neighborhood, which you don't know who Fred Rogers is.
But a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
That's right. And here is another movie about a Pittsburgh neighborhood. It's about a street and neighbors that go on. Yeah. And the good and the bad goes on. So I said the best questions are, no one is actually asking. So you can. You can just say, why Pittsburgh? And I say, because Pittsburgh is one of the best neighborhoods you could possibly live in.
I love it.
Just like Sheffield.
I love it. Right, okay, so I had two questions that I was going to start the interview off with. And when my kids aren't sure about an answer, they put an imaginary answer in one hand and an imaginary answer in the other.
Wow.
So I've got...
And you have to choose?
I've got two opening questions for you.
Okay, all right.
And one is in one hand and one is in the other hand.
All right.
Okay.
Go, that one.
Okay, this one is...
Yeah.
Based on the film A Man Called Otto and its narrative, can a person be too in love for their own good?
Yes, they can be. And if it is... solo, if you never admit it, if you never bring it out, if you never say, by the way, I love you, if you don't have the courage or the faith in order to utter those words, it's a life sentence. It's like being in prison, a prisoner of love. They write songs about such things. You have to get it out there, but then again, you have to do it in the right way, because otherwise they'll call Scotland Yard on you. You've got to do that in the right way.
So that's also Otto's story at the beginning. He seems like he was. I don't know how much we give away. You're the expert at this, because you know what we want to say and what we don't want to say. He's now, too in love for his own good. His heart is so full of somebody else, there's no room left for himself or anyone else, which is extraordinarily unhealthy.
Yeah, there's also no room for the unfairness and the bitterness that comes along with the world. And that's tough, because you've got to roll with this stuff. You have no control over what's going to happen tomorrow. All you can do is look at the future. And while Otto is a married man and the great love of his life is with him, he's able to do that. To live only in the present.
Yeah.
He's reminded of it again and again and again and again and again. And when he is alone and he's now he's lost the great love of his life, he forgets how to do that. He doesn't have the skills how to do that. And that means he's lost faith in the future, but it also means he gets no joy from the present day. And that's a terrible way to live.
And he's lost himself because he's too attached to what was and what is no longer.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're attached to that and that's there, you're half of something. But when it's not there, there's nothing to be half of anything.
You can make these jokes about, sappy, romances, you complete me. There's a line I thought that when I first read it, I said, nah, that's a little on the nose. But then when we got around to doing it, I said, no, that actually is a great way to describe love and partnership in one's life. Is like, I see things in black and white. She saw things in color. And without her, I've got none in my life.
Best line of the film.
I get that. I get that completely.
Yeah. Best line of the film. But when lines jump out at you, Atticus Finch's, you know, at the moment, To Kill a Mockingbird, my favorite line in that, in the West End, well, in the book anyway, is trying to do the right thing is the right thing.
Yeah.
And you, sometimes one line can define a piece. And that's pretty much it. This one,
I would say, yeah, my life was black and white, and she was the color.
I think so beautiful.
Yeah, the other one is you are not an idiot. The greatest, the greatest compliment you can get from a man called Otto. It says, look, I've been watching it, everything, all right. I've observed you, and there are idiots in this world. You are not an idiot. Oh my lord, that's AAA. That's the best grade you could get.
This movie, A Man Called Otto, comes out in cinemas in the UK and across Europe from January the 6th. And we're going to play this interview out on our last show before we break up for Christmas.
Oh, lovely.
Which is the 23rd, next Friday. So it's Christmas Eve Eve, my favorite day of the year. So Christmas Eve used to be my favorite day because Christmas Day follows. But now Christmas Eve Eve is better because Christmas Eve follows Christmas Eve Eve.
Yes, yes.
So we're going to be all ready for Christmas, all set for Christmas. How Christmas does it get in the Hanks household?
We are suffering this year because, number one, all of our grandkids are busy. You know, everybody's essentially jammed at this time of year, no fault of their own, as are we. Because here it is, you and I are talking, let's just say, you know, 2 weeks before Christmas. Yep. We've been on the road now. It is going to be very, we are going to get home with, we'll be home on the 18th. That is literally, that's what? That's 7 days before Christmas. Yep. Actually, only six.
Monday.
Because Christmas Eve is Christmas Eve. But Christmas Eve day is devoured by all the preparations for getting together. So we're really only going to have 5 days to gear up towards Christmas. And that's going to be a rush.
Well, whatever you're doing, have the best time. You are the best at what you do. I love you so much.
You're very kind.
Thanks so much.
Now, understand, I'm going to go home. I'm going to set my alarm for 3:45. I'm going to start parking a mile. What, 4 miles?
4 miles from work.
From the office.
Baker Street to London Bridge.
You actually run it?
Promise. I'm back.
Okay.
Do I not?
No, you look fantastic. Just that at the age of 66, my knees and hips and back have told me to stop running.
No.
Now, I will walk very fast,
okay. But
I will not get on one of those scooters. I will not do that.
Okay.
I believe the purpose of moving through town is to use your legs and the benefits that go along.
To look up.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Accept the beauty.
Lots of love.
Great seeing you. Marvelous.
All the best.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He is a musical giant, a rock and roll colossus who sold, get this everybody, over 160 million albums worldwide. His equally weighty, long-awaited autobiography, Surrender, 40 songs, one story, is out now. So please welcome proper legend, actual Bono!
Okay, so we're saying good morning to Bono, but we could have been saying good morning to Steinwich von Heischen, couldn't we, Bono?
I've been called a lot of things over the years, Chris. Some of them by you.
Who called you Steinwich von Heischen? For how long? And what else did he call you before he named you Bono Vox?
Yeah, well, I can promise you this. He was not a Latin scholar, was our Googie. He's my best friend, still is. I was 3 years old, he was four, and we had a sort of street gang into our teens, and I had many names, and one of them, yes, was Steinwich von Heischen, Ole, Biscuit Barrel, Bang, 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 or something like that. And I'm very pleased that I qualified to Bono. So even that is tricky in some quarters.
Yeah, so how did he, I mean, for people that don't know, you've told the story before, but it's in the book and it's a cracking part. Well, it's a brilliant book, by the way, but we'll get into that in a moment or two. Why did you end up with Bono and you've stuck with Bono?
You know, it's, you know, the theory is that we gave each other names, the sound of our head, like our vibe. And so The Edge was never going to be David Evans. Do you know what I mean? And Googie sort of looked like the sound Googie makes when it comes out of your mouth. This is hard to explain, Chris. But we were children. We were mere children. But the really significant thing is, I suppose,
yes,
is that we decided to be called by those names when we went out into the public. That was the, you know, because it implies a kind of intimacy with your audience, which is nice. And some people will occasionally come up to me and say, hey, Paul, how are you doing, Paul? As if, you know, that's getting close. And the last person to call me Paul was my dad, and he's dead. So don't call me Paul.
Yeah, it's definitely Bono. There's so much that I'd love you to read out, Bono, but you're not here, so it'll be too difficult. So I'm just going to read stuff out and ask you to comment on it if you don't mind. A beautiful passage here. Maybe Bob didn't take me too seriously as a teenager because he could see I was doing a great job of that myself, but I can still hear his voice in my head, especially when I sing. I thought he was standing in my way, but perhaps he just wanted solid ground for his son. And there wasn't much of that in Dublin in the 70s. Bob thought that to dream was to be disappointed, and he didn't want that for me. I got to thank him for his patience. I never got to apologise for being such a prick, though, until he was gone. I mean, that is right out there, isn't it? That brought tears to my eyes because it says so much. It's one paragraph. There's lots of beautiful prose in the book. There's lots of poetry in the book. But that is, you're just telling it like it is. That I love that passage.
Yeah, I was thinking about my father just as we came on air because I was listening to your London gay chorus. They were just these extraordinary voices. And I was thinking, my dad would have said, yeah, they can really sing. And my dad's big line with me is put down, which was actually quite accurate as well as quite funny, was he says, you are a baritone who thinks he's a tenor. And my father, the other reason I was thinking about him as I watched the snowflakes in your studio was he worked in the post office. And so at Christmas, he'd be a bit grumpy. But he did get me a job as I worked in the post office delivering the mail one Christmas. It's hard work, that.
No, I get it. I get it completely. Now, your dad was qualified, because for people who don't know, your dad was qualified to make a calibration of your voice, your tone, because he was an amazing singer. And I didn't know about any of this at all.
Yeah, he was beautiful. And, you know, I've been, to tell people that the book is out, I've been doing these little shows at the band called them Bono's Half Man Show. And I've been taking it around and I kind of inhabit my father's character on stage. I sort of become him. And I'd have to say that I always loved my father, but now I'm starting to even like him even more because his put-downs were funny. And he was a funny man. And it was mischief in him. And I talk in the book about meeting him in Finnegan's, our local, and just sitting there on a Sunday and kind of not talking to each other. And I had a very, it's not that unusual relationship with my father. I think a lot of males have difficulties sometimes with the father. I try to be a good father for my kids, but it's harder if you didn't have that great relationship yourself. So I'm working on it. And I've got beautiful kids and they so far so good.
Before you go, Bono, let's just give the book a shout out again. It's brilliant, this book. Honestly, I know you're on the phone, but I'm saying it when you're not on the line, whatever. It's just a great read. It explains so much. It's like, you know, it's like a companion. It's like a, especially if you're of a certain age, it's like, okay, it's a bit of a mirror. Am I reflecting this? Can I identify with this? It's fantastic is what it is. You allude to the fact towards the end of the book that when you learned the Lord's Prayer by heart for the first time when you're 9 or 10, you couldn't help singing it. Would you end this interview by singing us the Lord's Prayer? Would you give that to us for Christmas, please?
It's a melody that I only know. I don't know where I heard it, and I can't do it for you because it's something that's so, I only reach for it when I'm really anxious and when I'm, you know, when I'm having those moments where I'm lost. So I couldn't pull it out for you, but I will tell you that it's a powerful prayer and that I think about every line of it. So I go, you know, I go, oh, Father, I think, what's that? What's Father mean? And some people, you know, the force of love behind the universe is going to be a mother. Okay. Who art in heaven? What's heaven? Well, I think about what heaven is for me. And then, you know, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Well, we should try and bring that heaven unto earth. And that's kind of the way I go through it. But I sing the melody, but it's, I don't even know if it would be there if I tried. honestly, yes, I do mention that in the book. And these prayers are powerful for me. And look, a lot of these songs are prayers for me anyway, so.
Well, God bless you, Bono. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
She's swapping Viennese whirls for a twist on Dickens while bringing her usual joy to the world. She stars as the ghost of Christmas Present in Christmas Carol, the big new Sky Max movie on Christmas Eve. So you can keep your Gucci, Versace and Louis Vuitton because there ain't no brand like Joe Brand.
Very good, Bassos.
Hello.
Very good. And he's been ill as well. I mean, I think that's quite
yeah,
good.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Bassos.
Yes, well done, Bassos. Joe, welcome and well done.
Thank you.
You haven't seen this film.
I haven't seen
it. We've all seen it. Joe, seriously, this is a good show. It's a
Thank
great show.
You. I'm glad. Yeah, you get one go at the screening and I couldn't go the night it was on, so yeah, missed
well,
it.
Well, I have the link if you want to borrow it to watch it today, or maybe you're going to save it. So we're talking about Christmas Carol with an E, and there's a reason for that. Christmas Eve, 8 p.m. Sky Max, also available on Now on Christmas Eve. And so who is your Carol with an E?
Our Carol with an E is Saran Jones, who's great
yes.
anyway, and but particularly great in this. And it's obviously a version of the original by Charles Dickens, which really is, I'm genuinely, one of my favourite books. I've always loved it. And but Saran plays Carol as the main character, and it's set in the modern day. And it follows roughly the plot of the original, but obviously in a modern setting. And for some reason, they asked me to be a ghost.
Yeah, so you were in acting. We'll get onto that in a moment or two.
Oh, dear, let's not.
But Bill Murray's Scrooge. So he was a sort of high flyer back in the day. I think that was sort of an 80s, 90s version. This is almost our version of that, I suppose, because she's a high flyer in the business world, isn't she?
That's right, yes. And she's Scroogey, you know, very much so, in the sense that she's kind of cynical and it doesn't really matter if you kind of take people's money off them and sell them rubbish and that sort of thing. But obviously the ghosts will come and visit her and go, look what might happen to you.
In your wildest dreams, right, you know, and you don't get to live out your dreams unless you have them in the first place. So dreaming is cool, I think. Daydreaming is really... I used to get told off for it at school, daydreaming. I think, well, how am I going to have dreams if I don't daydream? Did you ever think you'd be starring as the ghost of Christmas Present alongside award-winning actress Saran Jones?
Yeah.
You did?
No. It's weird for me because I don't do many acting jobs at all.
Right.
Hardly ever, in fact. So I'm not kind of au fait with that world particularly.
Right.
So I was delighted to be asked. In fact, initially I said no because I was quite nervous about it. And I thought, surely there's someone that can do it better, like everyone in the country. But they persisted, which is obviously very flattering. So, it was a fantastic thing to do.
So let's tell it like it is. So the ghosts of Christmas past are Morecambe and Wise. And by the way, an extremely convincing Morecambe and Wise as well.
Yeah, they're great. And they've done the Morecambe and Wise thing for a while. They, in fact, did a show in the West End, I think, which was a huge hit some years ago.
Who are these Morecambe and Wise gentlemen?
Who are they? I knew you were going to ask me that. And I'm going to get Vassos to
They're Jonty Stevens and Ian Ashbattel.
Oh, they might be Morecambe and Wise coming back.
I actually thought it was Morecambe and Wise. I thought, how have they done this?
You can't spot the join. I mean, they're so convincing.
I know, they are incredible. Terrifyingly brilliant.
And what's nice about them being the ghosts of Christmas past is, of course, you know, at Christmas, Morecambe and Wise was the most watched show, wasn't it?
Exactly. So there are nods
it's so
back.
So clever.
Yes, it is. It's very clever. And, of course, Saran comes into the scene.
Scroogey Saran ends up on the show.
She does indeed.
The Christmas show is hilarious.
I love. You've shown me the wrong Christmases. No, we've shown you the right Christmases, but not necessarily
in the right order.
Yeah, well, obviously, for people that are elderly, you're not Vassos. Chris and I, we're edging that way.
Definitely.
There are so many kind of iconic moments in Morecambe and Wise that you just remember phrases from or scenes from. And yeah, they have brought those back, which is brilliant.
And Morecambe and Wise were hilarious. Of course they were, inarguably. Why do you think they were hilarious as a comedian? I think they were hilarious because they were grown-ups being daft. And grown-ups aren't supposed to be daft. They're not allowed to be daft.
No, that's right. That, to me, they were always like two kids, really, yeah. having a laugh. And there was a real innocence and naivety about them.
Yeah.
Where everyone else kind of looking from outside went, you know, that's very odd and strange. For example, there were loads of scenes with them in bed together,
yeah.
you know, as if they lived in a house together. And yet it was just so sweet. Yeah, and they were so such good fun together.
Yeah, harmless, you know, only ever gaining and garnering humour at their own expense or from other people who were in on the joke. It was that thing, wasn't it? You know, and if you were asked to be taking the mickey out by Morecambe and Wise, it was an honour, wasn't it? Indeed.
Absolutely was. And also, I think, you know, their roles. Was that Eric was obviously absolutely hilarious. And Ernie, I think it's really hard to play a straight man in a duo like that without sort of wandering into like trying to be as funny, because yeah. it must be quite frustrating.
Oh God, and it happened all the time, didn't it? It was Abba Costello, Laurel and Hardy. We also had Little and Large here as well, all very similar. That's why Anton Deck is so unique, because you've got two funny men, and that does work, doesn't it?
It does work.
Which is sort of impossible to pull off, really.
Yes, I know. I never wanted to be in a double act.
Come close?
To a double act? Not really.
No.
I would have sabotaged it, I think.
Right, so fast forward, the ghost of Christmas future is Nish Kumar, and you are the ghost of Christmas present. And your first scene in the show, because you haven't seen it, so I will tell you, but your first scene on the telly, you know this.
Is it the toilets?
No, you're on the telly. So in the...
Oh, I'm on the telly in the show. Oh, right,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So there's a little suggestion that you might pop up later again because they're watching you on the telly.
Oh, okay, no, I didn't know that.
I love it.
Sitting here in complete ignorance.
I love it when we know more about what the guests are up to than the guests. It's so funny. Would you like to say anything about this show to get people to tune in more than we have already? Christmas Carol, Christmas Eve, 8 p.m. on Sky Max. Come on.
What I would like to say is I think the original that it's taken from is an absolutely fantastic story, and that is followed through in a very interesting way in art. But also, and I never thought I'd hear myself saying this because I'm not a family comedian, but it's for everybody, and little kids could watch it and get something out of it, and like elderly grumpy people like me can watch it and go, oh, Morecambe and Wise. So there's something in there for everyone. So no, it's just a good watch, and it's family-ish, and it'll and everyone can sit round and they can comment and go, isn't Jo Brand looking attractive in this? How did they manage that? And all that sort of thing. So yeah, it's fun.
Jo, lots of love. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Take it from our next guest, because he wouldn't lie to you. A Smoo who is blue should not be seen dead with a Smed who is red. So he says in this year's big festive animation, The Smeds and the Smoos on BBC One on Christmas Day. So pull a cracker and watch it fly, hun. He's our favourite and yours, Rob Brydon.
Rob Brydon! You have been done with that intro. Good morning, Rob.
That was very nice.
So Mira is very late to the party. She just whispered in my headphone, she said, oh, you never see Richard Hammond and Rob Brydon in the room at the same time, do you? Should we go there, Rob, again with that one?
Well, yeah, this beard. See, my joke with this beard is I'm playing the lead in the Richard Hammond musical called I'm Always Looking Up. Isn't that nice?
Yes, and don't you have a song from it already?
Looking at Clarkson, looking at May, what can I do, what can I say? Is it a card, is it a van? I'm your man. Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, wow. So everybody well-ish at home, you have smatterings of the Lurgy. You can hear Vass has the Lurgy as well. I quite like it from a voiceover point of view, Vass, you know, but obviously, you know, your well-being comes before your usefulness on this show. But they're one in the same. Who's not so well at yours?
Little George, who's 11.
Right.
He's been knocked out with something. Claire's not been well. I've not been well. You're right with the voiceover, though. There's a period on the way into and the way out of a bad throat where you sound fantastic.
Yes.
Mm.
Very Logan Roy.
Rob, you know what Rob Brydon does? Do you know what he does? Very quietly. He bags the big ones, is what he does. That's what he does, Sinead. And he's bagged another big one. He does it all the time. Christmas Day, 2:30, BBC One, Rob Brydon and Friends.
Rob Brydon and Friends?
Yeah.
What's that?
The Smeds and the Smooths.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's what you're on for, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's not Rob Brydon and Friends.
It is in my ears and my eyes, Rob.
It's a Julia Donaldson. Every year for the last, I think, 10 years, yes. They've done the Magic Light, this fantastic company, do an adaptation of a Julia Donaldson, Axel Scheffler book. So The Gruffalo, Highway Rat, Snail and the Whale, Stick Man, Room and the Broom. And I've been a voice in all of them, which I'm very proud of. And just sort of happened, you know. And this year, it's the Smeds and the Smooths, and I am Uncle Smoo.
Oh, I know you are.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Well, like you say, it is the regular gang again, isn't it? Sally's there, everybody's there.
Yeah, some of the... Bill Bailey's in it, I think, this year.
He's good, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've not seen it. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah, I watched it last night.
Oh, OK, they've not shown it to me.
No, it's really good, honestly.
It's a lovely film. I mean, I see... When I recorded it, which was about a year ago, you see a very rough animation. But even those, they can be kind of charming because the storytelling is still there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I saw it in that. It's a very lovely, lovely story about coming together, putting aside differences, finding a common ground, which sounds topical, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? The Smeds and the Smooths. It's very, what's his name? Grinch guy.
Oh,
Dr.
Seuss.
Dr. Seuss. It's very that, isn't it? I know it's Julia, of course it is.
Yeah.
But it's very Dr. Seuss, and no worse for it. The Smeds and the Smooths. And of course, because they have to achieve mutual redemption, first of all, they have to be set against each other, like two sort of ferocious packs in some kind of rugby international. And there is often a dividing line within the animation.
Yes, Chris, you're absolutely right. Speaking of someone who hasn't seen it, I can agree with that.
It's so funny, because you could interview me about it and I would know more.
You tell me about it. Does it build nicely and is it good at the end?
It's great, it's great. And what they do is they spend the first 15 minutes. So they have one thing, like the Smeds never play with the Smooths, and the Smooths never dance with the Smeds, and they eventually they run out of things to have disagreements about.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? When somebody isn't really being themselves, if you keep on with that, then they run out of road because they've only sort of written whatever it is they're supposed to be to a certain extent in their heads. You know what I mean by that?
I think so.
And that's what's... Because they don't really not like each other. They really, in the end...
Hey, Vassos has just handed me on his phone the Smeds and the Smooths. I am now watching it for the first time. I can't hear it, but it looks fantastic.
Well, no, turn it up. Turn it up. Come on. We can turn it up. Turn it up. This is funny. This is a first. The star of the show, watching the show whilst on another show to talk about it.
I'm going to put my glasses on so I can really enjoy this.
Where did you get
Specsavers.
Did you? Interesting.
It's very good there, you know. And Specsavers get two sets of frames for just $69.99.
I can't really hear very well at the moment. Can you help me out with that at all?
Our trained audiologists.
Go on.
Oh, this looks good.
By the name of Bill.
Oh,
so good.
They're slurping tea in case you're interested. Oh. It might be a while before there's dialogue.
Yeah,
I don't know how you want to go.
Sally pretty much smashes it for the first 5 minutes, and then I think Bill opens up.
Yeah, yeah. And
anyway.
then Uncle Smoo comes on and everything changes.
Everything changes but you.
It's a game changer.
I mean, what else can I ask you about it if you've never seen it?
Well, they're always good. I mean, they're more than good. They're always great.
The ones you have seen.
The ones I've seen, and they're always on Christmas Day. It is sort of lovely, and I've always had a thing about, I quite like being on something at Christmas. It's quite reassuring, you know, but at the end of the year, you go, oh, I'm still here, you know, I'm still on something, and it's on Christmas Day, which is a nice way to end the year.
No, but people love you. We were having this chat earlier on the show. I know you listen to the show. Thanks so much for listening to the show as regularly as you do, but we were talking about National Treasures, and we think we've cited the youngest ever UK National Treasure, and we think it's Ryland Clark, and he says he's 33. We'll give him anything under 40, but even so, he will still be the youngest ever National Treasure. But we all decided, it was unanimous, you know, and the jury, they weren't out that long, were they, that Rob Brydon is a National Treasure. You are a nailed on National Treasure. People love you.
I don't think that's the case. What did Alan Carr call his tour? Regional trinket. I think he called his tour that, which I thought was So Alan, wasn't it? It was So Alan.
Rob, Merry Christmas to you and yours. Thank you so much.
Merry
it's great
Christmas,
to see you again.
Chris. Thanks for the show.
Oh, God, thanks for everything.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All right, you tinseltastic, lovely bunch of people. We've heard from a load of incredible guests already, but still to come, the acting and brilliance of James Purefoy gives us the lowdown on his brand new 8-part, very steamy, very racy, very saucy BBC Two drama, Marie Antoinette. The sublime Sally Lindsay lifts the lid on the second series of Channel 5's brilliant The Madame Blanc Mysteries with Jean White. And director and activist Trudy Styler tells us about her latest documentary, Et puis si Napoli, and then there is Naples, and her brand new podcast, Spark Hunter. So let's get right back to it. Vassos, who's next?
He is a brilliant British actor we last saw wearing waterproofs, but he swapped fisherman's friends for fancy French finery in the lavish Marie Antoinette on BBC Two and iPlayer from next Thursday. So let them eat cake while we enjoy a slice of the delicious James Purefoy.
James, hello!
Good
Welcome
morning,
to the Breakfast
good morning,
Show!
Good morning. It's so lovely being
it's
here
great,
again.
It's great, isn't it?
Yes!
I love being at work over the Christmas period.
It's just lovely.
I know, it's the best.
I came up to town yesterday because I live in Somerset. Oh, so Christmassy London.
It is.
It's brilliant. Just glorious. The kids, wide-eyed.
Yes.
Going around the West End. We went to see the Nutcracker yesterday at the Royal Ballet.
How good?
Oh, just, you cannot get a more festive treat than that.
Off the chain. Listen, you, what are you doing to us with this programme? We all watched it last night. Marie Antoinette, James Purefoy. I was there, I got my laptop out. So it's going to be a nice little, you know, bit of period class before I go to sleep. And indeed it was, but there was so much else to dive into and enjoy.
I'm sure you're probably referring to there probably are one or two racy moments, aren't there?
Well, there's
but
so
of
much going
there
on. They're barking mad, clearly. There's subterfuge going on. There's Austria versus France in the living room. That's all going on as well.
Yes.
You don't know. There's the. Who's the schemer? The scarlet schemer? The king's whore?
Yeah. Oh, dear. That's well, what the lovely Madame du Barry.
But that's what she says. She says, she may be the king's whore.
You know, he had a lot of lady friends.
He had a lot of lady friends. Had it all going on.
I mean, a lot of lady friends.
Were you aware of all these shenanigans before you dived into the part?
No, not really. And I don't think a lot of people are.
I think that's one of
the wonderful things when you look at something like this. It's a chance to look through the keyhole at the maddest royal family you could ever.
Is that right?
Yeah. When you're born in Versailles and you die in Versailles and you live most of your life in very closeted, away from society, you know, this isn't a royal family that go and open a care home or a railway station or go and meet people. They're just there in Versailles hunting. And as far as I could see, just doing a lot of lady fun in the afternoons.
They are doing lots of lady fun and gentleman fun in the afternoons.
I mean, just extraordinary.
They bring their horses into the drawing room, for heaven's sake, and they poop all over the floorboards, and then some poor underling has to sort that out while they carry on having, again, you know, hijinks whenever, wherever, with whomever they feel.
Yeah, that's precisely it. He had a house on the grounds in Versailles.
Right.
He was terrified, Louis, like a lot of the kings, of getting any sexually transmitted diseases. Mm. I know this is early, but this is absolutely true. And so he would keep, a stable of ladies in this house that were guaranteed not to have any sexually transmitted diseases.
Because of a particular
condition. Because if you caught it then, you were finished.
So this is 1755-ish is what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. The last one, really, we concentrate for my character, the last sort of 5 years of his life.
Right.
He was on the throne for 59 years. And about 15 years later, of course, there was the French Revolution. So that was just around the corner.
No wonder, by the way.
Well, no wonder. I mean, really, little surprise there. You look at them and you go, really? Was that a surprise?
Yeah, OK.
Coming at you down the line?
Enough of those royals. But it is like the crown for 1755, isn't it?
It is, and so many interesting things about it. I found, for example, that one of his children had died when they were two, when he was two. This little boy had died when he was two. And I couldn't find out why. Why has he died? And you find, and then eventually, I just really dug deep in the research, found this extraordinarily sad story that the nuns would look after the young kids. And these nuns would go to a cemetery in Saint-Denis in Paris. There was a saint's grave. They would take bagfuls of earth from that grave back to Versailles. Then they would mix a handful of earth with the boy's porridge every day.
No way.
And then he died of organ failure. no way. Really? I mean, just extraordinary. The kind of things that were going on in that palace at that time, bizarre.
Oh, no, I get it completely. And look at the episode titles. There are eight to choose from. So episode one, The Slap. Episode two, Rival Queens. Episode three, Pick a Princess. Episode four, Queen of France, by the way. Episode five, Rebel Queen. Episode six, De e Machina. Mm-hmm. Episode seven, The Ostrich Bitch. Ooh, episode eight, ouch. Queen of Hearts. I mean, they don't pull any punches.
No,
this
they
is
don't.
The BBC, for heaven's sake.
This is, however, written by an extraordinary writer called Deborah Davis. She wrote a film called The Favourite that Olivia Colman won the Oscar for. So she knows her onions. And
she knows her regal onions.
She certainly does. And, you know, she will have done a huge amount of research into this period and into these people's lives. And she'll be giving up her take on it. And it comes very much, I think it's a feminist take in it, in the sense that Marie Antoinette was only 14 when she arrived in the court of Louis.
From Austria.
From Austria. She'd been married, check this out, married by proxy. Which means that they send someone to Austria, that person marries her in Austria.
Right.
So that she is supposedly, inverted commas, married by the time she comes back to Paris. And then they have a second wedding.
To the actual person.
To the actual person, which is my grandson, who turns out to be Louis the 16th.
All right, Sinead, my grandson, give us your hot take on it. It's less than 24 hours since we all watched this hottest of shows.
Yes. No, I absolutely loved it. And I don't really know the story of Marie Antoinette
so
much.
I didn't either, to be honest.
So that's kind of like...
Because she's much quoted,
well.
Isn't she? But we don't know much about her.
Yeah, we know, like, Let Them Eat Cake.
Didn't say it.
She didn't say it.
Didn't even say that.
Well, oh, okay.
Let them eat gâteau?
Gâteau, probably.
Maybe. Tout le monde mange le gâteau immédiatement.
There is a...
Pain au chocolat.
Oui.
There's an absolutely heartbreaking moment, which apparently is a very famous thing, so it's not a huge spoiler, about the pug. Her little dog.
She wasn't allowed to keep. She was barely allowed to bring anything with her at all to Paris.
And she didn't know the rules and the etiquette. And I think she starts to feel a bit lonely at the beginning, doesn't she?
Yeah, does that sound familiar? Didn't know the rules.
This
didn't
is
the etiquette.
Massive. Marie Antoinette beginning Thursday, 29th of December, 9 p.m. BBC Two, with all episodes then on iPlayer. If The Sopranos did period dramas... That's what we're talking, isn't it?
Yeah. It's exactly like that.
Succession did period dramas.
It is incredibly beautiful.
If The White Lotus did period dramas, that's what we're talking, If, what's that? Triangle of Sadness did period dramas. You've seen that, by the way.
Oh, my goodness.
How great is that film?
Oh, good. That film
How
is good so good.
How good is that film? How great are you, James Purefoy? Happy Christmas to you and yours.
You do this every day.
Yeah. But it's always different.
Where'd you get that?
What, my jingles?
Yeah.
I don't know, I've got a spare, actually.
Have you?
I called this one William and this one Harry.
Oh, bless.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Our next guest has made the curious decision to write, produce and star in another series set in a beautiful, sun-drenched French village.
Yeah, why would you do that? Why would you want to do that? I wonder.
Series two of the Madame Blanc mysteries begins with a Christmas special tomorrow at 9 on Channel 5, and it's every bit as good as you'd expect from the brain and brilliance of Sally Lindsay.
Hi, Sally!
Hello, darling.
Look at you.
How are you?
A ray of sunshine.
I can't believe I'm the only person in my family not ill. Everybody's
really?
Everybody's ill. And I'm like, Lurgy, yeah.
Not COVID?
No, totally fine. We're all clean.
Yeah.
Tested. But no, it's just like good old-fashioned colds.
I know, people are being laid very low, aren't they?
Did you have your works due yesterday?
No, we didn't have our works due. Oh. So we're working with Cinch next week, the car
company. Oh, yeah.
Who are just brilliant. The more you find out about how they go about the business, it's so complicated. It's so simple for us. Because it's so complicated. But you bought a car from Cinch.
I did.
But we went out for... We had a working lunch. More lunch than working.
Speaking of naughty elves, I mean, apparently the Cinch elves were quite naughty. So was he.
Well,
I've heard.
It's Chris Evans.
I've heard stories.
He wasn't it?
I know. Well, they'd be disappointed, wouldn't
exactly.
they?
Exactly. I'd be terribly disappointed.
We've never done it.
What's happened to him?
We've never done it.
This time.
We need to do it.
This time.
Listen, let's talk about this brilliant show of yours, The Madame Blanc Mysteries. We're heading towards season two with a seasonal opener, a Christmas special.
Yeah.
Would you like to frame? We've all watched it. Would you like to frame it for us?
Yeah. So basically, Jean comes back. It's 8 months later. She's very settled in Saint Victoire. She loves it.
She's, why is she there? How?
So she was there to start with because what happened? She had a lovely little antique shop in the northwest, and she's married to a lovely man. And he unfortunately died on a shopping trip, an antique shopping trip back from France in the first episode of the last series. But she discovered in that that he basically was living a double life. He had another woman, and he had he'd mortgaged all her money away. So she had to fly over to Saint Victoire, this little French village, and find out what's going on. Also, there was a ring missing that he was travelling back, which was a lot of money, and that went missing. So therein lies our mystery. And then we started the mystery of the Madame Blanc mysteries, and that happened last season. So that was all great. So you can get that on catch up, I think, if you want to catch up.
Channel 5, My 5,
yeah. And then we start with Jean's decided to stay in Saint Victoire, and it's 8 months later, and she's quite settled. She loves everyone, looking forward to her first Christmas. And then she gets a call saying, off a police officer called Richard, who says, look, my boss, Caron, is accused of murdering his wife. So that's our first scene, is that his wife gets murdered. Yeah. And there's a knife in a Christmas bauble.
There's a pre-titles bit before that, though, isn't there?
There's a bit before that,
Is very important, isn't
Well,
it?
She gives him a present. She gives Caron a present.
Yeah.
And, and then we see him, him and his wife really hate each other.
Yeah, they do.
They really hate each other.
They've got all the motives.
They've got all the motives. Yeah, so to be honest, everybody thinks he's done it. So it's up to Jean to sort of solve the crime. Okay. So they're in. But also on the other side, we've got another storyline where Dom, Jean's friend, his uncle comes to stay, played by the amazing Tony Robinson.
Yeah, well, he's in the first scene, isn't he, after the titles?
And we got him.
Hang on a minute.
I know.
Is he sticking around then or not?
He is now, whether he likes it or not.
But the thing is, once you seduce your fellow actors, your thespes, to be in one of your shows, and they go and see this wonderful place that you seem to have parachuted into, which isn't in France, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. It's a complete lie.
Why would they ever leave?
Well, we do have fun. You can imagine. like this show, it's the same kind of atmosphere. We do have a nice time, and it comes, you know, I just don't like working in an atmosphere where there's any pressure. And there was loads of pressure because it was 40 degrees because we had to film in August and January and July because of the Christmas special. So, we had to have it edited by. So it was ridiculous. And these people just turned up, and these amazing leads I got, and all my mates who just came and had a bit of a holiday, boiling, sweating on set, changing shirts. It was a nightmare, but we all had a brilliant time.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I hope that spills over in the series, but this one's a little bit tighter. It's a little bit, you know, we're a bit excited about this one.
I mean, it's gruesome, but it's warm. Do you know what I mean?
I know. It's really nice and sort of cuddly, but there's some murder.
Yeah,
and then
there's been a murder.
I think it's sort of a throwback from my loves of, you know, sort of these amazing things like Jonathan Creek and Pie in the Sky and May Gray back in the 90s.
Good for you.
And I think and Lovejoy, obviously, completely ripped off. And I just really feel that that's my kind of telling. It's what I like to watch. So I sort of made it, basically.
We've got to go. We're out of time.
Okay.
You're awesome.
Thank you. And so are you.
The Blanc Mysteries are back. Season 2 kicking off with a Christmas special tomorrow night on the 22nd of December, Christmas Eve, 9 p.m. on Channel 5. And you can catch up on My 5 with the whole of the first series. You're awesome, Sally.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Pass us over to you.
She has been winning at this business called show since she made her TV debut in the 70s. Her latest gem is a brand new podcast series starring Mark Rylance and Rebecca Ferguson. Episode 7 of Spark Hunter is out tomorrow, so please welcome Madly, Deeply, Trudy Styler.
Nice. That's morning, Trude.
Good morning. Good morning, Team Chris. Well, it's lovely to be back.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And you?
That's great. Yeah, fantastic. It's amazing how much magic one little exchange over a posh drink can create, isn't it?
And the biggest magic is how we sleep better.
We do, because we've exchanged little sleeping hacks, Trudy and I. More of that in a bit. But first of all, Spark Hunter, it's so good. It's not really my thing, I've got to say, Trudy, but it's awesome. Frame it for us, if you don't mind. Where did it come from? Because one of the protagonists involved in the whole production has insider knowledge of the subject matter.
Okay, so do you want me to pitch it or do you want me to tell you the...
Yeah, imagine you haven't made it yet and you want us to give you the money. There you go, boom.
All right. So Assumptuous, we're in 2044 right. in New York City.
Okay.
A sumptuous dinner is taking place in a restaurant mm-hmm. between an AI maker and his bot, a female bot. Entire conversation is being recorded by government operatives and the president himself of the United States. And the issue is they fear that the bot has gone rogue and snipers are at the ready to take her out. Her existential crisis is one that every human being ponders. What are we doing here? Not at the restaurant, in life.
just that small question to address. And so wonderfully and so intriguingly. So Mark Rylance is in it. Rebecca Ferguson appears as well. Who else is in it?
Charles Dance.
Yeah.
Linda Powell, mm-hmm. actually, who plays one of the operatives, who's Colin Powell's daughter, and Richard E. Grant. And my husband Sting has a cameo role called The Veiled Man. Elliot Sumner is also in it. Nothing like a bit of nepotism. Well, we did it during lockdown, yeah. so we were short of actors. And the rest of the cast were actually recording remotely in their closets in
the, wherever they were,
New York, in the United States.
So KB Miller, who exec produces, has experience as principal investigator on an AI project for the U.S. Department of Defense.
Yes, so Kenneth really knows his onions when it comes to AI and has done stuff with the government that he doesn't really talk about too much. But he and Teresa Tunney are related. They're both descendants of Andrew Carnegie, in fact, and they're very good writers. And so the project was given to Mark as a starring vehicle. And Mark, for a wonderful reason that goes back to us doing a show together at the Globe, where I directed a fundraising evening for the Dalai Lama, Mark remembered how fun the show was and how great, and said, and knows of my interest in the environment, so said, I'd like Trudy to direct.
So isn't it funny, you obviously, you know, committed and very much, you know, a supporter of everything to do with our beautiful planet. But therefore, you know, if AI is around, which of course it is, to not be interested in that as well, which, you know, on the surface may seem sort of counterproductive, would be remiss, because the two go hand in hand. That's where we are. We are part of nature and we invented AI. And what's interesting about this for me is I didn't realise that, you know, if AI, it's so difficult for AI to become more intelligent than us, isn't it? It's so much more difficult than some of us fear for now.
It may be for now, but for now in the AI world is really algorithms are just developing so fast that the fear in this, and I guess the fear for a lot of people is, you know, could they be a force for evil and end us all? Or I don't know if you've heard Yuval Noah Harari's 2 Million Years in 2 Hours, his podcast also speaks of, you know, maybe that they're our savior, maybe that we could all get a sidekick robot to be our consciences. Yes. And sort of talk us into
super consciousness.
Better, exactly, super consciousness, really talking us into better choices.
So algorithmically, they're already way ahead of us because their capacity is much bigger than ours. And that's why we fear our smart devices overwhelming our kids at such a sort of early neuroplastic moment in their lives, or neuroplasticity, when, you know, when the half of their brain turns to mush and they can then be reprogrammed by whatever they're getting most of. And they get so much of that. And we defer that issue to our kids because we're too scared to admit that it's also on our doorstep as well. But that's not intelligence, is it? That's information. Will they ever be able to decide things like we can, or imagine things? Because, you know, the thing that sets us apart, there are three things, aren't there? Imagination, memory, and linguistics. Will they ever be able to think? You know, and you, what have you gleaned from your involvement in this?
Well, Our bot, played by Rebecca so beautifully, is really, she's been implanted with her own thoughts. And I think that's what makes her a bot who's not only got singularity, so sort of thinks on a human level, but she's surpassed it because she has empathy. She's empathic. And she's even empathic to people who do her down or who are mean to her, as you'll see if you listen here, if you listen to the podcast. And so she feels people. She feels their pain. So if they're giving her a hard time rather than be reactive and aggressive, she feels that they're coming from a wounded place. And I think that that's maybe something that at the moment, algorithmically, it isn't there. And certainly when we look at raising our kids with their devices, what really is going on in their empathic systems? Yeah. I think this is an interesting...
Spark Hunter, episode 7 out tomorrow via all podcast platforms. And it's an amazing story of AI becoming more human, more worrying or acceptable, we don't know, and therein lies the dilemma. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, good. You nailed it.
It's brilliant. I listened to it in the sauna over the weekend. It was great. And I had the lights off. So it was
perfect.
It was even like, whoa, what's going on here? Trudy, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much, Chris.
It's great to see you. Great
Lovely to see you.
Nice to see you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All right, here he is. The one, the only, terrific, tinseltastic Tom Kerridge. Good morning, Tom!
Good morning, Chris.
Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Bassos. How are we, guys?
Oh, Tom, we're fantastic. Listen, thanks, first of all, for what you did a couple of weeks ago in your fantastic shed with lovely Chris, once again hosting some auction winners with brilliant Rob Brydon and Tom O'Dell and Ricky Wilson, too. Thank you a thousand. Thank you, Tom Kerridge.
It was honestly, what a brilliant, what a bunch of lunch guests that was. I mean, if you could put a fantasy lunch table together, that was exactly it. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and the auction winners always stay for supper.
They do have it. It goes on into the evening, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So listen, it's Tom Kerridge versus all comers this morning. You ready for this?
Yes.
Okay, so Phil Vickery is on this morning, and he's doing three-way Brussels sprouts. Off you go.
Well,
come on.
Three-way Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, can you beat three-way Brussels sprouts? Sorry, did you faint then or something? What happened then, Tom?
I thought you were waiting to tell me that Phil Vickery's three ways of doing Brussels sprouts.
Well, no, I'm not going to... He's got enough oxygen air time on this morning. So
I was like, Phil Vickery's doing sprouts three ways. I mean... First, I like to do them in a wok. So I like to pan fry them in a wok.
It's already good.
It's already good. So that, and you know, it's been a massive thing the last couple of years. But you know those lovely crispy chilies that come in that lovely chili oil that you sprinkle over the top?
Told you.
Those with sprouts, absolutely delicious. There's the classic one, bacon and chestnuts, just cooked in a load of butter. Mm. And then there's a lovely way of doing it, curry. Like curry powder and sprouts.
What?
Absolutely amazing. Honestly, I tell you, the flavour is fantastic. And then great over the top, some Parmesan cheese.
All right, hang on. So take us through that one, step by step. How would you do that? So you get your sprouts. What do you do next?
Yeah, cut them in half. Don't do the little cross thing in the bottom. You don't need to do that anymore, right? Cut them in half. Butter in a pan.
Yep.
Get the butter really kind of like get nut buttery. Then start toasting. Put the sprouts in. Throw them out. And then just put a little sprinkling of curry powder over the top. Loads of salt and pepper and keep tossing them. A little bit of smoked paprika. And as they're just beginning to soften, grate over a load of Parmesan cheese.
Oh, absolutely my goodness amazing. Me. I've never heard that before. When did you discover these?
I've actually done them for one of the books. They're absolutely delicious. Wow. And then I'll tell you what, I'll beat Phil Vickery. We'll do it a fourth way. We'll do Sprite four ways. We'll do them with cream. So you reduce cream down by about two-thirds so it goes really thick and bubbly. Slice all your sprouts very, very, very thin, okay? Like, it's called a chiffonade in a kitchen, but I would just thinly slice and throw them into the cream raw, stir them around, and they'll soften and cook, so you get cream sprouts as well.
Yeah, so Phil Vickery might not be on this morning because Tom Kerridge has just eaten him for breakfast, is what he's done. See, that's what I want. I want you to come out fighting, Tom. Finally, Tom is in the game. Here we go. All right, so... Next up, Tom Carriage versus all comers. Okay. Next, today in the Sun, Jamie Oliver's tastiest Christmas dinner. Cover your bird in bacon bits. We'll talk about that in a moment or two. But he does crispy layered potatoes over roasties.
Crispy layered potatoes over the top of roasties.
No, as opposed to, instead of roasties. So
what are you doing? I mean, that's an end there, right there.
I know.
You have the alarm bells are going off. You can't do layered potatoes instead of roasted potatoes.
He's getting up too early.
He's an amazing chef. He's a brilliant human being. He's fantastic. But he's lost the plot there. Honestly, you can't have a roast Christmas dinner without roast potatoes.
Exactly.
Can you imagine putting down layered potatoes
for
the family now? Honestly, that would cause World War.
He's spending too much time in America. That's what it is.
That would be worse than letting Grandad win Monopoly. Come on. It would cause all sorts of nightmares. Jamie Oliver's lost the plot with layered potatoes.
And so it's the Oliver's. By the way, like you, I love Jamie like a brother, but clearly he needs to get some more sleep or lay off the pre-breakfast cocktails. So give us Tom Kerridge's roast potatoes. Go.
So normally the best way of doing them is cooking them all the way through in salted boiling water. Okay, so but on a gentle simmer, not on a big boil. Don't do that thing where you drain it, put the lid on, and then shake the pan. Gently lift them from the salted water and put them onto a cake rack, okay, so they can steam dry.
Oh.
And that steam drying process means that they crack, okay, all around the outside. Then put into the oven, preheated oven, a tray with a thick layer of oil. And I use just straight standard cooking oil, not goose fat or duck fat, because it might be a little. I just want the potato to be crispy. Veg oil. Then, once the potatoes have dried, you can put them into the tray. Don't pack them in too tightly because that will create steam. And then you're pretty much like roasting and frying them together in the oven. And there's guaranteed super crispy potatoes and lovely. Another way of doing it is, if you want to, is dust them with a little bit of polenta over the top as well. That helps to give them a coat of like extra crispy.
Tom, I've never heard that before. I've known you for ages. So we're not parboiling, we're boiling them through.
Yeah, we're cooking them all the way through, and then you gently lift them from the water with a slotted spoon and put them onto a cake rack to leave them to dry. And it doesn't matter if they go cold, it's no worries, it's no stress, because you've got to put them into hot oil, and you roast them in that hot oil, and it gives them, that makes them crispy, because you're not worried now about cooking the potatoes because they're already cooked.
Interesting.
So all you're essentially doing now is just crisping them, so you can concentrate on making them, like, you know, when they go that lovely kind of glassy crisp on the outside, they look amazing.
I wondered how you did that. So that's how you get the really sort of glassy exterior and the really soft interior.
That's exactly it, Chris. Wow. Yeah, that's the best way of doing it. Not slicing them and doing a tray bake.
What is going wrong with Jamie? I tell you. Oh, my goodness me. Oh, crumb all ye faithful, Jamie. For heaven's sake, come on now. Well, Tom, I know you weren't scheduled to come on today. I just wanted a bit of your magic today, because you've given us you've given us the sort of the holy trinity of what we need to do on Christmas Day there. So thanks so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure, mate.
I be seeing you later?
Yeah, I'm floating about later on. Are you coming to the pub?
What do you think? It's Friday.
Yes. See you later in the pub.
All right, mate. Lots of love to you and Beth and AC. Thanks so much for being here.
Have a great Christmas. Cheers, guys.
He's the best. That's Tom Kerridge, he of the Hand and Flowers, and the coach in Marlow, and the butcher's tap in Marlow, and Lush, and everything else that's amazing. Corinthian in Trafalgar Square. He's got a big place up in Manchester now. Tom Kerridge, he's the best.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Who's on the line now? I do believe it is the host of our brand new Drive Time show from January the 9th, Monday. It is Ricky Wilson. Good morning, Ricky.
Morning, Ricky.
Good morning. Morning. How's everyone doing? Merry Christmas.
We're all very well. How are the detailed and in-depth preparations going for the 9th of January?
I came in and had a photo shoot.
Yes.
Which was fun.
That was fun.
a solo photo shoot, Chris. I usually do it with four guys way behind me.
How did that feel?
Brilliant.
Great.
I didn't have to turn around once and say, "Can you stop talking?"
Are you coming in for one of those funny weeks where you do a pilot week the week before?
I'm doing a day.
You're doing a day on the Friday or the Thursday or?
The Friday, Friday. I'm excited about that.
Okay, cool.
That's when I can go and get all stuff off my chest and out of my system.
All right, and then you hit the airways. 4 p.m. The brand new Ricky Wilson Drive Time show. It's your new full time job. This is what you're doing now, isn't it?
It looks like it, yeah. I mean, unless something goes horribly wrong over the Christmas period. But yeah, it's very exciting. I'm going to have a job and a boss and holiday pay and stuff like that.
Oh, you won't get holiday pay. I've not told you that yet. Listen, we've got it all going on here. We have the pièce de résistance, marvellous movie. She left it an hour and a bit. So Vassos brought in his homemade mince pies, which are gorgeous. The rest of the team, mini mince pies. We've got bite-sized sausage rolls. We've got the games going on here. And then Mira, she just brings that. Look at it here. We have what do you call it? It's a cocktail hedgehog, isn't it? What is it? Cocktail hedgehog. We got pineapple, we got olive, and we got cheese cocktail sticks.
Oh, I can see now. Yeah. They've adjusted the camera.
Oh, can you see that? Right.
Yeah.
All stuck in a bisected grapefruit. An inverted half of a grapefruit. It's all going on here, Rick.
1978 over there.
If you want to start a couple of weeks early, today's your day, mate. Today is your day.
Okay. Well, I started on Tuesday morning. That's when I started feeling Christmassy. Well, it's happening now. Everyone's descending today.
What happened? What happened on Tuesday?
What happened? You know when you just wake up and you feel an overwhelming Christmassiness?
Yes.
Yeah, it's marvellous, isn't it?
All right. How many trees do you have?
Three.
Three trees. Okay, where are they? One in the living room, presumably.
One's behind me in the living room / kitchen.
Yeah.
One's in the posh room that we don't go in until Christmas Day.
Nice.
And then we don't go in again for 364 days.
I love it.
And one, this sounds posher than it is in the library.
It does sound posh. How come it's not as posh as it sounds when you do have a library and there's a tree in there?
I guess it is as posh as
it
sounds.
It is really posh. It's so cool, Ricky. There's nothing wrong with that, mate. Don't worry about that.
Hence, I'm taking a job, full-time job.
Yeah, okay. Do you have a wine cellar?
No, we couldn't afford that. Wanted one of those. Have you seen those ones where it's like a spiral staircase?
That's what I meant. There's a name for those, aren't there? I can't remember what they're called. They're pretty cool, though. They usually have
glorious.
A sort of a glass top so you can see inside.
Yeah,
they're
backlit. We wanted one of them. Well, I wanted it as a panic room.
What a place to panic. Right. And are you hosting Christmas dinner at yours?
We are, yeah. Everyone's coming down today. There's going to be 10 of us.
Yes.
That's a big one, isn't it?
Nice.
It's my first one in London, which is going to be weird.
All right, and who's in charge of cooking?
Lorraine. Mm-hmm. Lorraine, my mother-in-law.
Nice.
But I'm helping. I think I'm in charge of roast potatoes, which I like being. It's a big responsibility because it's the best bit. But I've had a practice run last weekend.
All right, Ricky Wilson's roast potatoes. How do you do yours?
In the same way that Michael Caine does them. Not Michael Caine, the chef. Michael Caine, the superstar. He once did an interview where he said how he did roast potatoes, and I've done them the same way ever since.
Okay, I do believe we may have that audio because I think we played it out a few times.
Really? He starts with cold oil. He doesn't put them in hot oil, which is strange. And you always need an acid in there as well, I find, either lemon juice or a balsamic vinegar.
Okay, and do you bash them up? Do you agitate them?
I parboil.
Yes.
Then I shake in the pan when
they're
dry. Then I put a tablespoon of flour on top.
Yeah, very good. Or semolina. Either will do.
All right, okay. And then I put them in cold oil with balsamic vinegar, rosemary and salt.
Ricky, happy Christmas. Thanks for everything you've ever done to help us with our charities. The last thing we did was a lunch together a couple of weeks ago. That was ace. That went gangbusters.
Oh, it was good, wasn't it?
At Tom Carriage's shed, of course. Happy Christmas to you and yours, especially the little ones. I'll leave it at that. I'm leaving it at that, Ricky. But it's your most special Christmas.
I've never heard you refer to my nether region that before.
Right, Ricky Wilson, brand new host, full-time regular host of the Virgin Radio Drive Time Show from 4 p.m. Monday, January the 9th.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Well, that's it from us. Thank you so much for listening to the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast. The team and I will be back in January bringing you more best bits, so don't forget to subscribe. But more importantly, have a fantastic Christmas and hopefully the happiest and most positive start to the new year. Ta-da. Sorry. Ta-da! Ta-da, ta-da, ta-da! With bells on, goodbye. Stay safe. We love you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.